What then is this taste of freedom? What is freedom? That is perhaps a question that we ask ourselves even more often than we ask ourselves, what is Buddhism? The word for freedom in the original Pali text of the Udana is vimutti, and it's equivalent to the Sanskrit vimukti. It can be translated as release or emancipation, or also as freedom. The word for taste is rasa, which means juice, taste, special quality, flavor, relish, pleasure, essential property, extract and essence. We'll come onto that shortly. Now, in recent times, we've heard a great deal about freedom. Usually, of course, in connection with civil and political liberties. And we have therefore come to think of freedom in a certain kind of way. We've come to attach a certain meaning to the word. But in speaking tonight of the taste of freedom, I'm not really concerned with the meaning of the English word as such. I'm concerned with the English word only as a provisional equivalent of the Pali word. I'm concerned with freedom in the sense of vimutti. So what is vimutti? Before going into this question, I want to say just a few more words about the Udana passage in which the Buddha describes the Dharma Vinaya in terms of the great ocean. You remember that the Buddha says that there are eight strange and wonderful things about the great ocean, and that similarly there are eight strange and wonderful things about the Dharma Vinaya. And one of these things is, of course, the fact that the great ocean has one taste, the taste of salt, and that the Dharma Vinaya has one taste, the taste of freedom. For the moment, I want to concentrate on these two epithets, strange and wonderful. You might have missed them, might have overlooked them, but I want to give them their full force. The great ocean is strange. The great ocean is wonderful. The Dharma Vinaya is strange. The Dharma Vinaya is wonderful. What does this mean? How is the great ocean strange? We must remember where it was that Buddhism, as we call it, arose. We must remember where it was that the Buddha taught. He taught in the valley of the Ganges. In other words, he taught many hundreds of miles from the great ocean. So far as we know, the Buddha himself had never seen the great ocean, and the vast majority of his disciples had never seen it either. They knew it only by hearsay. They heard rumour of this great ocean, this great body of water, far greater than any river, even the Ganges itself. They knew it only by hearsay. So to them, the great ocean was a foreign, an unfamiliar element. And it was the same, it is the same, with the Dharma Vinaya. The Dharma Vinaya is strange to us. We could go further. We could elaborate on that. the spiritual life is strange to us. The unconditioned is strange to us. The transcendental is strange to us. It's something of which we have only heard. It represents a foreign element. It's not our native element. The Buddha himself is strange to us. The Buddha is the stranger. He comes, as it were, from another world, another dimension. He stands at our door, perhaps, but we do not recognize him. Even the spiritual community is strange to us. Strange, that is, if we are not ourselves true individuals, if we are not spiritually committed. So, the great ocean is strange. The Dharma Vinaya is strange. How is the great ocean wonderful? It's wonderful in its vast extent. It's wonderful in its perpetual movement. It never rests. It never stands still. It never stays, not even for an instant, not even the tiniest particle of it. It is ever in movement. It's wonderful in its uninterrupted music, the sound of the sea. It's wonderful in its ever-changing lights and colors, the blue and the green and the mauve, the purple, the gold. It's wonderful in its unfathomable depth. And it's particularly wonderful when we see it for the first time, when we come into contact with it for the first time, when perhaps we swim in it for the first time, when we plunge in, maybe on a hot day, maybe on a cold day, but we plunge in. We move our arms and we move our legs, and for the first time in our lives, we're swimming in the great ocean, or at least paddling. So it's the same with the Dharma Vinaya. The Dharma Vinaya is not simply vast in its extent, it's infinite. The Dharma Vinaya, the principle and the practice of the Buddha, is a shoreless ocean. We can see no end to it. And it's not something fixed, rigid, static, unmoving, unchanging. It's full of life, it's full of movement, it's continually adapting itself to the needs of living beings. And it's continually speaking to us. This ocean of the Dharma Vinaya, it's singing to us. It's playing its own inimitable music to us in its own indescribably appealing and fascinating way. Not dull, not uninteresting, but alive with all sorts of brilliant and tender lights, all sorts of vivid and delicate colours, alive, we may say, with the radiantly colourful forms of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Dharkas and Dharkinis. And it's so deep, this ocean of the Dharma Vinaya, that we can never hope to fathom its depth. So the Dharma Vinaya is wonderful in all these ways. But we don't usually think of it in this kind of manner. But this is what it's really like. The Dharma Vinaya is wonderful. The Buddha is wonderful. As the Matricheta, or as Matricheta himself says in his 500 verses of worship, what steadfastness, what conduct, what form, what virtues. In a Buddha's qualities, there is nothing that is not wonderful. The spiritual community is wonderful. Spiritual life is wonderful. It's wonderful that we can sit and meditate together. It's wonderful that we can live in residential spiritual communities. It's wonderful that we can work in team-based right livelihood projects. It's wonderful that you're all listening to me here tonight. It's wonderful that I'm speaking to you. So the Dharma Vinaya is indeed wonderful, strange and wonderful, but we don't usually experience it like that. After a while, we start experiencing the Dharma Vinaya, Buddhism, spiritual life, as something old and familiar. It's old hat. It's a stage we've gone through when we were young and naive. It's said that familiarity breeds contempt. It's probably more true to say that familiarity breeds indifference. In the case of the Dharma Vinaya, familiarity breeds indifference only when we've been familiar simply with words, with concepts and external forms, with the words, concepts and external forms in which the Dharma Vinaya finds expression, but with which it is not to be identified. But if we have been familiar with the spirit, as we may say, of the Dharma Vinaya, if we've had even a little taste of it, we will see the Dharma Vinaya as more and more and more wonderful. It's important, therefore, to keep alive this feeling, this sense that the Dharma Vinaya is a wonderful thing. According to Plato, philosophy begins with a sense of wonder. Certainly, there's no spiritual life without an ever-continuing sense of wonder, a sense of wonder with regard to the Dharma Vinaya. But we can go further than that. Udana goes further than that. The Buddha himself goes further than that. After describing the 8 strange and wonderful things about the Dharma Vinaya, the Buddha says, these then are the 8 strange and wonderful things about this Dharma Vinaya, seeing which again and again, bhikkhus, partakers, take delight in this Dharma Vinaya. I want to concentrate on these 2 points too. I want to give them also their full force. First, the bhikkhus, the partakers, the followers, the disciples, see the strange and wonderful qualities of the Dharma Vinaya again and again. Never become tired of them, just like some people see a film again and again. Never become tired of it. In the same way, the partakers, they see the Dharma Vinaya. Look at the Dharma Vinaya. Hear the Dharma Vinaya again and again. Never become tired. The more they see, the more they hear of the Dharma Vinaya, the more wonderful it appears. And second, the bhikkhus, the partakers, the Buddha says, take delight in the Dharma Vinaya. The Dharma Vinaya is not only wonderful, but enjoyable. It's enjoyable because it's wonderful. It's wonderful because it's enjoyable. Spiritual life is enjoyable. Meditation is enjoyable. Living in a residential spiritual community is enjoyable. Working in a team-based right livelihood project is enjoyable. Having our faults pointed out is enjoyable. Being thrown in at the deep end is enjoyable. Not being allowed to rationalize is enjoyable. It's important to remember this, that in every way, the Dharma Vinaya is enjoyable. Buddhism, to use that term, is enjoyable. It's something in which, seeing again and again, we take delight. I hardly need point out how greatly this differs from the usual conception of religion and religious life.